Hello and welcome to another edition of the Armchair Directors. For each episode, we take a look at one of cinema's great directors and their essential films. This week on the show, we are looking at The Notebook, directed by Nick Cassavetes. Returning on the show today to talk about The Notebook is Professor Marie Westhaver. Professor Westhaver, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back.
So yeah, this was a payback for making you watch horror films, right?
It was, but you did at least let me watch like one of the best. Mm-hmm. So, and I think as far as romance movies goes, this one is... hits a high watermark.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I almost have to defend myself because I think the biggest accusation I have for it was like, well, you're a guy. You don't like these kinds of movies anyway. I like romance movies. I don't watch a lot of them, but, you know, like, example, another Ryan Gosling romance movie came out last year, La La Land. I thought that film was the best film of 2016. So there are romance films that I like. It's just... this film was just it hit all my check marks as far as what I predicted would get happen. They're from they're different sides of the tracks in life.
She's literally.
She's rich, he's poor. I figured his dad will be welcoming and nice and everything, and her parents are going to be very judgmental and they're going to get in the way and say you can't marry them. And then they're going to spend some time apart.
Throw World War II in there.
Yeah, and World War II, I figured that's going to play some factor in there. Then they're going to spend some time apart from each other. They're going to see other people. And then at the end, they're going to get back together. And then there's going to be this, is she going to choose him or is she going to choose the other guy? And of course, she's going to choose Gosling. It hit all the check marks for me.
Except, and it even had more you didn't even mention. I mean, it's got the date on the water. It's got the smooch in the rain. It has all every cliche except for running towards each other on the beach. You know, they left that one out. But that's all just, you know, skeletal. You know, really, I think what makes the movie stand out, because you've seen that story before. I think what makes this one good is the acting. And James Garner... is the movie, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, I would say, like, well, if you want to, like, overall, did I like it or not like it, I can't say I like this movie. But, like I said earlier, if, like, there's a spectrum of, like, great movies, which a lot of I talked about I really liked on the show, and one that I talked about that I just absolutely hated was Dogville, this is nowhere near Dogville. I don't like this, but still, like, nowhere near as my hate. But I say there is a good movie in here, I think. I think if you take away... all the past, like how they met and all that, and just made it on, you know, this, you know, old couple that have been together for decades and decades, and the husband, the wife is suffering from Alzheimer's or dementia, and she can't remember, and the husband's trying to make her remember by doing all these things. That's a good enough story, I think, as it is, where you can make a good hour and a half, 2 hour movie on it, and I think it can be really emotional. I think it can do really good. Cut out all that early stuff all the stuff was the really cliched stuff. I think when it got into present time, it was far more interesting to me. If you do that, I think you got a much more solid movie.
You know, I'm going to respectfully disagree because I like the parallel stories. I like that as a device anyway. I liked it in Memento. I like it in the current TV show, This Is Us, where, you know, meanwhile, back in 1970, whatever. Okay. I like that. I like the way the two stories sort of converge. I like the way you see the young people and you realize one of the things I think is really joyful about the movie is that Ryan Gosling plays a very troubled young person who you realize grows up and becomes James Garner, you know, who's very warm and laid back and likable, and you want that ending for that character.
Yeah, they look nothing alike, by the way.
They don't, by the way. And, you know, Ryan Gosling actually wore brown contact lenses to cover up his blue eyes so that it would be more believable.
Yeah, they look, because even when he's going through that family scrapbook, and it's supposed to be them when, like, I'm assuming when they're, like, in their 30s and they have a family, like, there's no way in, like, 10 years he went from looking like Ryan Gosling to James, like, a young James Garner. Like, there's no way. They look nothing alike.
You know what's great about that album, though, is that Nick Cassavetes is actually Jenna Rowland's son. And those pictures are actually the pictures from the family album of Jenna Rowland's and John Cassavetes. Yeah. And they just photoshopped James Garner over his face.
And it's interesting. We can talk about the director now because he is the son. Talk about big shoes to fill. He's the son of John Cassavetes, which people don't know. he was not only a very famous actor, he was in The Dirty Dozen, he was in Rosemary's Baby, but he's also considered by many to be like the founder of independent cinema. He did a lot of the films with Gina Rowlands. Like, mm-hmm. the two films I've seen, one was Gloria, 1980, and probably his most famous one, The Woman Under the Influence. And it's strange how he's considered all these films that, you know, don't really, aren't studio films. They're not like the big budget popcorn films. And here's his son doing what's probably one of the most biggest popcorn movies, one of the biggest romantic movies. Everybody goes, oh, I just love The Notebook. So it's just strange that he got his dad, who was all about breaking conventions and rules. And here he is making one of the mm-hmm. most conventional films ever made.
Well, you know, and I think he succeeds on a couple levels. One of the things I think is really beautiful about the movie is it feels like an old 1940s movie, you know, where they light the actors really, really beautifully. There's so mm-hmm. many great scenes where they have just situated the actors in beautiful settings, like that scene where they are on the lake mm-hmm. with the geese. Yes, it's just... Yeah. Breathtakingly beautiful.
It's a very well shot film. I will give you that.
It opens with that beautiful scene on the lake with the same geese. Well, probably not the same geese. Mm-hmm. And then it's very red. And in the end, they show you a similar scene and it's all blue. And then they kind of use those geese, you know, to bring you back to that moment and also, you know, flying off to indicate leaving. Mm-hmm. I just think it's very, very, the metaphors are very, very pretty.
Yeah, it's very nice to look at film. And I think one of the things also is that there's too many of, like in a lot of romance movies, there's the romantic montages when we see them falling in love. Because you can't show everything, mm-hmm. so you're going to show, you know, them having some playful little fights, you know, running around with each other on the beach. There was that. And they're laughing all the time. It makes me think of the parody in The Naked Gun when it's Leslie Nielsen and Priscilla Presley, yeah. And it's just a lot of that, but it just gets really silly. Like, they're coming out of a theater just laughing, having a good time, and you see on the playbill it's Platoon. And the scene when they're, like, running on the beach together holding hands, but then, like,
they miss each other?
No, like, they're holding hands, and then this couple comes right towards them, so they accidentally clothesline them. Like, every time I think of romantic montages in movies, I'm just going to think of The Naked Gun.
But, you know, in The Notebook, what it reminds me of is the same kind of thing that they use as a device in Bollywood films, which is they drop mm-hmm. into, like, a music video. And then they do this montage, which is meant to explain, you know, the romantic mm-hmm. background and all of the sexual situations they're not going to portray. And it's all built into that. And it's expected. And it's mm-hmm. wanted. So it has to be part of the movie. And I think these kind of, I tell my students, you know, look for this, like the sort of montage of Hallmark moments. Because it all looks like things you could freeze and then put on one of those inspirational posters. Mm-hmm. You know, like the two people looking at each other and they're a silhouette and, you know, the... Mm-hmm. The sun setting behind them, all of those kinds of things.
Kissing in the rain.
Yeah, and they do go there in this film. Mm-hmm. But also, even though the fact it's very manipulative and you can see it coming, it's done so masterfully.
Mm-hmm. I will say, we were talking about with Matt earlier before the show, like, I don't think, was that supposed to be a twist? Is that considered one of the biggest surprises that the old couple is Allie and Noah? Because, you know, I could see that coming a mile away.
Well, I think everybody can. I think they kind of try to make it seem like, well, maybe it isn't, because, you know, he really doesn't look like Ryan Gosling. And he does look like he could be the other guy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I think it's meant to be a question, but I don't think the reveal is important. What's important is that you realize the story that you're reading is their story. Mm-hmm. And by the way, I have to say again, James Garner, he has such a wonderful voice. He's such mm-hmm. a great narrator. I mean, I don't think you could have picked a better person when the role involves having to read.
Yeah.
Unless it was, you know, Morgan Freeman.
I will say, I think him and Gina Rowlands, I thought, were the if there's a heart of the movie, I think they were the heart. I bought them a little bit more than Gosling and McAdams, just because you can see it when he finally breaks through with her, she finally remembers, but then all of a sudden she protracts and then she throws that fit and he's crying. You feel that, you know? I think there's a lot more heart in him it's showing his dedication, like with the kids being like, you got to come back home. She's never going to get better. Mm-hmm. There's no way you can do it. And he says, you know, my home is where she is. Mm-hmm. You feel that. I think there's just more heart and emotion. And, of course, the ending spoiler, when they die together.
Holding hands. Don't forget holding hands.
But there's the heart is in that movie. I found when it ever got into the present day, I was far more interested than just seeing the big cliche fest, I felt, which was Gosling and McAdams.
Although I do like Gosling and McAdams because this was really the movie that I think put them both on the map. And apparently they filmed all of the 7 years later scenes first. And they didn't get along at first, Ryan Gosling and Rachel McAdams. And then they hashed everything out. And then it was time to have a Christmas break. And then Ryan Gosling had to lose 20 pounds and the beard. And then they came back to do the earlier scenes. So I think they're much more comfortable with each other in the earlier scenes because they filmed them later.
Yeah. And Gosling and Megan, like, they're both good actors and actresses. I like them both. I think Gosling may be just with all, you know, with being in something like Blade Runner this year or La La Land or a film that was underrated. I thought it was The Nice Guys from last year. I think he's really, like, if there's, like, a prime actor, maybe him and Tom Hardy, I think, are the best in the game. And McAdams, I don't want to take anything away from her. I haven't seen as much. I know she was in True Detective, the second season, which I didn't care for.
She was in Mean Girls.
Mean Girls.
She was in The Family Stone.
I mean, she was in Doctor Strange and Sherlock Holmes. She's a good actress, too. I don't want to seem like I'm putting her down, but I would say Gosling is, like, the premier actor right now.
Interestingly, when they cast him because they wanted somebody who wasn't, quote-unquote, handsome. But this was such a success as a romance that, you know, he's now billed as, you know, the handsome leading man.
Yeah.
So that was a good career choice for him.
And, if it, you know, in the movie, that's definitely for the ladies because you see him take his shirt off all the time.
Yes, he does do that. They apparently filmed a much more explicit second sex scene, which they then cut out because they wanted to keep the PG-13 rating.
Yeah, and I guess in a film like this, it would feel a little bit tasteless if you throw in like full frontal nudity or something or a really long sex scene.
I also thought James Marsden was nice in this one.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, okay, the romance was nice and everything, but Marsden got kind of screwed over.
He did.
I mean, he there was nothing dishonorable in what he was doing. He truly loved her. He wasn't just after her for money or anything. He loved her. He did nothing wrong, and what does he get in the end? She dumps him when they were supposed to be married.
Yes. Yeah, raw deal. But, you know, there's some wonderful, great speeches, though. You know, when he says to her, you know, I don't want to have to convince my fiancé that she should be with me. Mm-hmm. Yes, that is exactly
right.
And, of course, she says, you know, you don't have to because I know I should be with you. And that's kind of where they leave that scene, which, again, makes you think, well, wait a minute. Maybe she did end up with him, and he turned into James Garner, because you could see him becoming James Garner. He was sort of, laid back and quiet and faithful and loyal and all of those things you see James Garner doing. So I think he was a good foil. I also really like casting-wise. To me, Jenna Rollins looks like she could have been Joan Allen's daughter when she was younger. You know, they look like they could be related.
She looks a lot like a young, older Rachel McAdams.
Yes, yeah. She does. That was a good, that was some good
they
casting. And Joan Allen was good in this. Mm-hmm.
And that's another sort of romantic cliche because you figure out, how could she do that? How could she hide all those letters from her daughter? And then you figure out, because she was like her daughter once as well, and she also fell in love too.
Yes, yes, and she chose the other way. So again, there's that question of, you know, how hard is it to buck tradition? How hard is it to turn against your family and what they tell you you should do. But again, with the speeches, and I know it's so, no one ever has these grand speeches.
No, they don't.
Which is why you have to have them in the movies. Mm-hmm. When Ryan Gosling's character is saying to her, you know, what do you want? You know, forget about what you think I want or what you think your fiance wants or what your mother wants. You know, what do you want? And you can see she's really never thought about it before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess we could now talk about this as big, even more of a cast of the Nick Cassavetes' film. This is even bigger of a Nicholas Sparks movie because this has spawned, like, I can't, there's like one ever out every year. Like, I wrote down a couple. A Walk to Remember, I think, was even before this. And then there was, like, The Longest Ride. I think they had, I think that was the one that had a Clint Eastwood son in it. And there's a million others. I think there was one called Dear John. There's a million others.
He's very schmaltzy, and I have to say I don't really like his books, and I did not like the book, The Notebook. Mm. And I didn't go see The Notebook until somebody finally said, look, you've got to see this movie because it's not what you think it's going to be, which is, Yes, it is a schmaltz fest. But I think if I had known from the get-go that, you know, James Garner was somebody to picture in while I was reading the book, I probably would have liked it better.
So have you seen any of the other Nicholas Sparks
no.
movies?
No. Well, I don't think I will. Although I have gone on to look for more movies by Ryan Gosling. Like, after I saw that, I saw Lars and the Real Girl, which I think he is amazing in. And I'm always surprised when I meet people who say, oh, yeah, I really like Ryan Gosling. And I mentioned The Notebook and Lars and the Real Girl, and they haven't seen those two, which I think they're his two best movies.
The Notebook, I figure that'd be like his most popular one.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah, Gosling, he is good. I would say my favorite one of his probably, well, I might say La La Land, but I also would say Drive. It's a very kind of subdued performance. I know that's sort of the criticism of Gosling, that he's kind of wooden. He just kind of smiles a lot. You can definitely see that a lot in Drive, but it's an awesome movie. I think he gives a really solid performance.
You know, when he was preparing for this role, he would go rowing on Lake River, the Ashley River, every morning, and then spend the day making furniture. And he made the kitchen table that's in the movie.
Oh, really? So I guess I should probably talk about it. I know some people are thinking that I don't like this movie. I guess I have to defend myself now because I'm a guy. And I'll admit, there are a polar opposite of chick flicks, which are really, really just male and, you know, huge testosterone movies.
Right, car chases, explosions.
Yeah, so Fast and Furious movies, I've never seen one of those movies. The Expendables movies, never seen those because those movies are depressing because they're like 60-year-old men trying to relive the 80s. 300, you know, that's something.
Oh, yeah.
300's
Carnage, galore. Yeah.
Which is supposed to be this manly testosterone movie for men. And then it's like all a bunch of sweaty men together in loincloths, but never mind. So I agree. There are a lot of films like this, schmaltzy movies for guys that are just, you know, kind of action movies. So I agree. We have our own bad stuff, too. But let's talk about romance movies I like. So another Gosling romance movie I just talked about, La La Land. But another one he did also with Emma Stone was Crazy Stupid Love. It's pretty good. It's also, it's kind of like a, I think Love Actually did it, where it's like all these romance movies.
See, I love when you have parallel stories like that. I love Love Actually.
Yeah. It's a pretty funny movie. And the recent, oh, go ahead.
Let me ask you about La La Land, though. Do you, now that you've seen The Notebook, can you recognize that Ryan Gosling fans might have seen another version of Noah in La La Land? Here's this guy who's kind of going his own way. It doesn't look like it's going to be a money-making venture. Mm-hmm. But he's dedicated to, you know, being a world-class musician and, you know, goes on that path. He meets the girl of his dreams. They fall in love. They are separated by something. And then, you know, does he get back with her or not? It's kind of the same story, except it's music instead of carpentry.
Yeah. And I think it's definitely less predictable because, and spoiler alert, La La Land, they don't end up together in the end. They go their separate ways and then they reunite 5 years later, but they're happy with where they are, and they while they imagine what life would have been like, they still, you know, are separate. And I think instead of, like, you know, the cliche of different sides of the tracks, kind of the Romeo and Juliet thing, they're both in the same place. You know, she's a struggling actress. He's a struggling musician. I think that's why they connect with each other so much in that movie. And there's a lot of music, too. So,
but it's also a look at what could have been.
Definitely.
And I think that's a favorite trope to look for in a quote-unquote chick flick.
Yeah. And then for one, I didn't write down, but it's a French film. I might have seen it. It's very influenced by La La Land because the director talked about this movie. It's called The Umbrellas of Cherbourg.
Oh, yes, with Catherine Deneuve.
Catherine Deneuve, and that's a very kind of very similar movie. They sing every word of dialogue in that movie, which might get annoying for some people. But love story, kind of people who separate
during the war, not the Second World War, but yeah.
During a war, I forget which one.
Algiers, I think.
I think Algiers. And then they come back, things aren't different, and they reunite later.
And that's bittersweet, and also a what might have been.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so that one, a recent one I really liked, Silver Linings Playbook with Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence. I still think that's Jennifer Lawrence's best film. Great performance.
Have you seen Winter's Bone?
No, I know that was like the one she did right before it. Is that good also?
Oh, wow. Yeah, in terms of, no wonder she became famous. That's an amazing tour de force performance.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then one I also like, it's way back from the 70s, not the 70s, oh, 70-something years ago. The Ghost and Mrs. Muir.
That's been a long time since I've seen really that. Like, but that's that a classic.
One. Yeah, because if the actresses from that era, the Golden Age, whatever, Jean Tierney is probably my favorite, so that's why I like that one so much. And other romance movies you'd recommend?
You know, what are we going to consider a romance movie? Is it going to be something that, you know, only women are really going to want to see? Or are we going to include, like, Casablanca, mm-hmm. classic old 40s movies?
I just assume anything where the main character or people falling in love, that's the main important part of the movie.
Well, I think Casablanca, in a way, sort of is part of this genre, mm-hmm. which is, you know, two people who, you know, kept apart, you know, throw the war in there for extra emotional value, and leave it with a bittersweet ending.
Okay. Let's see other ones. I would, Benny and June, you seen that one?
Yes.
That's a sweet one.
That is a sweet one. Well, romantic comedies, that opens up a lot more.
Yeah, I know I haven't seen
anything with Cary Grant in it.
Yeah. So, I forgot. A lot of screwball comedies. Yeah. Probably my favorite one of all of them is Bringing Up Baby.
Baby, yes, that's
that
mine
movie
too.
That movie's hilarious.
And I love Some Like It Hot.
Yeah, that's a classic. Let's see. His Girl Friday. I know that's more kind of...
And even, I know it's a trite example, but It's a Wonderful Life, because it also has, you know, this idea of, you know, what could have been, what might have been. And this choice that I made affecting everything.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we could talk a little bit about the director, Nick Cassavetes. We already talked about how he's a lot different than his father. I know he actually directed, I haven't seen it, but he directed one movie. I forget what it's called, but his dad wrote it. And I think it was one of the last things that John worked on before he died.
I haven't seen it either.
Have you seen any of those other films?
No, I'm just really impressed with this one. But it doesn't make me want to necessarily delve into his others. Because even though I think it's a well-made film, there's no like new ground.
No. And like you said, I think it spawned all these Nicholas Sparks other movies that we see pretty much every year. And I figured like, well, there's a definite crowd for these movies. And I figured they probably make a good deal of money at the box office. And I was looking them up, like, this is the highest grossing film. It only made $115 million, which it was a profit, but not like, you know, huge, huge gangbusters huge. And his other films, like, I don't think they've made much more than like $40 million. I find that strange, just because I figured these films would make huge money.
You know, it has to be a good movie. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know that the other Nicholas Sparks stories translated as well on the screen.
Okay, so, one thing I did forget to bring up. I was looking up, there's a television sequel coming up. It's on the CW, and it's supposedly going to be, based on the same characters, and it's going to be following their lives. Now that they're together, what happens? They're going to get married. I think it's going to follow them and their kid and having children and their... And I'm pretty sure it'll probably get to the point where they get old and Allie gets Alzheimer's or something.
Yeah, I don't know that we need to see all those years. I don't know that everybody wants to revisit those characters without the actors who are in the movie.
Yeah, it sort of reminds me of just, you know, how we're, like, what we're getting now with Star Wars. How you're not just getting another installment of what happened 30 years after the original trilogy. You're getting all these in between fillers, like how did the Death Star plans get stolen?
Yes.
What happened, you know, what has happened to Han Solo? What happened when he was young? What happened to Boba Fett? You know, and now we're going to get what happened to Obi-Wan after the prequels, but before the original trilogy.
It's like fan fiction gone amok.
Yeah, it's basically, hey, you're a fan, you wrote fan fiction.
We'll make
script.
A movie.
Yeah, you don't need to fill in everything. Just let us imagine something for ourselves.
Well, you know, one reason I think that The Notebook succeeded where other Nicholas Sparks movies have failed and other romance novels don't do as well is that, you know, we mentioned so many examples where it has a bittersweet ending and this does not. It actually has a sense of joy to it that I think is what makes it special.
Yeah, the fact that they're going together and that she will die remembering who he is and that instead of dying, you know, and this, you know, not remembering.
And the the way it portrays this idea of lifetime love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a Lifetime movie. Like,
literally. Yeah, this actually it would be perfect on the Lifetime channel, or Chickalodian, as we call it in my house.
Okay, getting close to the end of my questions. Is there anything I haven't covered that you want to bring up now?
I think we covered everything from the movie. Mm-hmm. I think I'm glad you saw it. I don't have any other gentle but sweet movies to insist that you see, but I'm glad you saw this one.
It's still, this is far from the worst, I'll say this is the far from the worst romance I've ever seen. The worst romance I've ever seen was between Anakin Skywalker and Padme.
Oh, that was awful.
You want to talk about bad love story and no chemistry? Just
and not believable at all.
The dialogue in that between them is like, it's only because I'm so in love. And it's just, oh, God,
cringe.
So bad.
Cringe, yes, terrible, terrible okay. stuff. I've never actually used the notebook in my classes. But I have mentioned, you know, right around Christmas time, I will tell the class, you know, if you're looking for a gift and you have any woman on your list, you know, you can always rely on the notebook. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy saying that because every woman in the room will be nodding. Yes, the notebook. Great movie.
Yeah, anytime I watch a movie like this, I was like, all right, I need to man myself up. Got to watch a tough movie. So
you know, it's funny. Right. I make my husband watch this kind of stuff all the time, and eventually he'll say, you know, I need to see a car crash or a robot. And not just people sitting around talking.
Right after this movie aired, I was like, all right, okay. It's Halloween time. I got Shaun of the Dead. I'm watching that.
The antidote.
Yes. All right. Well, that wraps up this episode of The Armchair Directors. We have been talking about The Notebook, directed by Nick Cassavetes. Don't forget, you can listen to The Armchair Directors every Thursday at 9:30 a.m., Sunday at 2:30 p.m., or anytime at dragondigitalradio.podbean.com under the category Armchair Directors. Professor Westhaver, I want to thank you again for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me on.
For The Armchair Directors, I'm your host, Alex Baker, saying, that's my sweetheart in there. Wherever she is, that's where my home is.